This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 264 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the FanDuel Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Before getting into this week's mailbag questions, I want to let you guys know about the $3.5 million Best Ball Championship over on Draft. Best Ball Leagues are great. You can draft a team, and then you're done. No start-sit choices, no trades, no waiver wire. Your lineup is optimized for you each week based on your players' performances. So you're getting the best lineup possible given the players that you have. For a limited time only, you can get a free entry in the Best Ball Championship when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code NUMBERFIRE. That's right, a free shot at $1 million just by using my promo code NUMBERFIRE. That's when you make your first deposit on Draft. Just search Draft in the App Store or go to playdraft.com. This first question is from @CGBeck5. I think it's safe to say that Kerryon Johnson will have an increased pass-catching role with the Lions. Do you think CJ Anderson will get the lion's share of the goal line touches? How high are you on both players? Thanks. Love the show. Thanks. So I'm not super high on CJ Anderson because he's mostly just a handcuff who might fall into the end zone, and when that happens, it's likely to be pretty unpredictable. But I think the biggest concern for Kerryon this year is definitely what happens at the goal line. With Theo Riddick gone, Johnson's receiving ceiling is actually pretty awesome. And it's even awesome in an offense that will likely want to be a little bit more run-heavy. He has a chance to grab hold of a pretty high target share without Theo Riddick. The problem is the goal line. Kerryon was awesome last year, but he had just 2 goal line rushes in 10 games. He did have 8 carries inside the 10, but to really hit a ceiling for Kerryon Johnson, he'll need to be the goal line guy in that offense, period. But for what it's worth, after changing everything in my projections to reflect the Theo Riddick move, Johnson was basically a fringe top 10 running back in PPR formats. Given the receiving upside, you can make a case for him over Nick Chubb in a PPR league. Pretty easily. Johnson's got a projection of 57 receptions now, and I have him for 219 carries as well. If they decide that he's even more of a workhorse than that, then watch out for Kerryon Johnson. This next question is from @FFTylerO. What are some of your favorite wide receiver 2 values in redraft leagues? Wide receiver 2s on their respective teams, not average draft position. For example, I like Kenny Galladay, but I don't think he should be going a full 4 rounds ahead of Marvin Jones. Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious one to mention here first is Chris Godwin. Given the amount of work that there could be to go around in Tampa Bay, and given their new coaching regime and how vertical that offense is likely to be, and given Chris Godwin is a good receiver, I think there's a Juju Smith-Schuster type season in his range of outcomes. Where he's not the number one guy, but his numbers are a lot closer to the top guy in his offense than we would have expected. I also like Curtis Samuel this season. I'm buying into the hype. DJ Moore is my preferred choice of the two, just straight up, but Samuel might be the better value right now. With Cam Newton healthy last year, and when DJ Moore started playing more snaps, the two were pretty in line from a target share perspective. The obvious difference was that DJ Moore was a rookie and Curtis Samuel wasn't. But Curtis Samuel hasn't even turned 23 yet. He turns 23 this month. And he also played a hybrid role at Ohio State. Samuel was listed as a running back during his entire collegiate career. He saw more carries than receptions in each of his 3 years at Ohio State. And admittedly, that's not the type of receiver that I generally target coming out into the draft. But Samuel's progressed. He's gotten better. And it would be foolish for me to not recognize the type of player that he currently is and the type of role that he can play in this Panthers offense. Last year, about 25% of Samuel's targets came 15 or more yards down the field. DJ Moore's rate was about 18%. But I think an important split with these guys is when DJ Moore started playing more snaps, which happened in week 8, and when Cam Newton was active and playing, so through week 15. In that split, Curtis Samuel had an average depth of target that was nearly 3 yards greater than DJ Moore's. And it makes sense to want to utilize Curtis Samuel down the field more given his speed and really what the Panthers have on that roster. So I think what we'll see is DJ Moore hitting a higher target share this season while Curtis Samuel is benefiting down the field more. But Samuel has the ability to make plays closer to the line of scrimmage given his background and what he did in college. That just comes together to make him a really intriguing later round pick. Basically, I love DJ Moore, but I think that his ADP and Curtis Samuel's ADP, those two should be closer together. And then some other players that I think should be on your radar as number 2s on their team. I talked about Dante Moncrief on my Breakout Wide Receivers podcast or the Breakout Players podcast, and he's still in play. I'm into him. And I still think that targeting either Geronimo Allison or Marquez Valdez-Scantling makes a lot of sense. I'm really just targeting good offenses here and offenses that could throw the ball a lot, or at least rank in the top half in the league in pass attempts. Honestly, any of the criteria that I talked about on the spotting breakout players episode that I did definitely applies to this type of question. This next one's from @number1punna. How do you diffuse all the information given by all the different podcasts that are out there? How do you actually know who or what to trust when it comes to analysis? So how I approach this will be far different than how a listener or a consumer who isn't analyzing this stuff all the time is going to approach it. It's easy for me to break things down because I'm doing a lot of that work myself. You guys likely don't have time to do that. That's partially why you're listening to this podcast. But my advice in consuming fantasy content is to always ask why. Why does an analyst feel a certain way, and does that actually relate to fantasy football? Why is an analyst using a particular statistic? Just ask why. Make sure that what you're consuming is logical and makes sense. And I think naturally people are going to go back to analysts once they see that that analyst knows what they're doing. Like if I give you guys crap advice all the time, you wouldn't listen to this podcast. I think there's sort of a trust factor that gets built between analyst and consumer through the years of predicting things right and having a good process. So ask why, but it's also okay to be cooler with one analyst than the other. Sometimes the way an analyst presents information is gonna connect with you more, and you'll start to see the game differently, and that, in turn, makes you a better player, and it keeps you coming back. This next question is from @DFSandDonuts. I'll just keep asking until I get an answer I like. Josh Allen, a top 12 quarterback, true or false? I'm gonna go with false. I think a lot of people believe that Josh Allen is in the same type of situation as Lamar Jackson since a large chunk of their fantasy points last year came on the ground. Both of them had crazy rushing seasons. But there's a big difference. Lamar Jackson's production was far more sustainable. Last season, Josh Allen had 47 scrambles versus Lamar Jackson's 18. That's according to Pro Football Focus. And then all the while, Allen ran the ball 89 times. Jackson ran it 147 times. So about 53% of Josh Allen's rushes were from scrambles. Only 12% of Lamar Jackson's came from scrambling, which means that those runs, the majority of his runs, were planned. Both players have flaws as passers. You're not really banking on their arm in fantasy football. So between the two, Lamar Jackson is the logical choice given what he does with his legs will likely still be there to a higher degree. And are you going to trust Josh Allen's arm to be a top 12 quarterback in such a competitive landscape? I think it's certainly possible that Allen can hit that mark because it's not like he's going to not run. But I also would rather place my bets on other players being drafted around him. So I'm not overly bullish on Allen like some others are, especially when Lamar Jackson will be taken around the same time in your draft. This next question is from @TopherK44. Kirk Cousins had his second best season in passing yards, his best completion percentage, the most touchdowns he's thrown in the season, and the least amount of interceptions in the season he's started. He went from 4 rushing touchdowns to 1, really the only negative. Why is he drafted so low? I mean, I think the main reason is purely based on upside. The Vikings have been pretty open about being a more run-heavy team this year. And last year when Kevin Stefanski took over that offense, in 3 games as their offensive coordinator, Minnesota had a pass-to-rush attempt ratio of 1.21 in neutral game scripts. Before those games happened, their neutral game script ratio was 1.68. That's a huge difference. Now, volume itself doesn't matter a whole lot at quarterback game to game, but run-heavy teams are naturally going to have a touchdown ratio that skews towards rushing. Since 2011, pass-to-rush attempt ratio versus pass-to-rush touchdown ratio has an R-squared of 0.21, so it's not insignificant. I think that's why you'd be not as into Kirk Cousins this year. I don't think he's a terrible pick, but quarterback is so competitive that I'd rather be focused on a player who I know is going to give me that top 5 ceiling. To me, Kirk Cousins is more of a super flex league pick than a single quarterback league pick. This next question is from @DogfishBradford. Can you do a rundown of what round 4 to 6 running backs you like the most? Henry, Carson, Coleman, Drake, Michelle, White, Cohen, Miller, etc. So to answer this question, I'm looking at draft ADP. So anyone being drafted on average after pick 36 and then before pick 72. From strictly a value standpoint, I don't love a ton of running backs in this range. Part of that is because history tells us that it's a dead zone for running backs. But some of the guys like Kenyon Drake, Tariq Cohen, Lamar Miller, James White, they don't do it for me. Especially the pass catchers. I generally fade pass catching running backs who are coming off big seasons solely as pass catchers. Rich Rebar or Lord Reeves on Twitter, you guys heard from him a couple weeks ago on the Tight End podcast, but he posted a great thread on this on Twitter back in May. He found that, quote, the last running back to finish top 24 in points per game in consecutive seasons while having more than 70% of their fantasy points come via receiving was Darren Sproles, 2011 to 2012. So good luck to James White and Tariq Cohen. And I'm just not that into Kenyon Drake because the Dolphins are going to be bad and Kalen Ballage is likely to steal some work. And with Lamar Miller, he'll give you a floor, but I want a ceiling. And one of my favorite late round picks this year is Deontay Foreman. In that range, though, I guess my answer would be Chris Carson and Tevin Coleman. The Seahawks have a lot of passing touchdown regression that's likely to hit this year. Russell Wilson had a touchdown rate almost as high as Patrick Mahomes last season, and it was far higher than his career average. And then the Seahawks were the most run-heavy team in football, but they had a touchdown pass-to-rush ratio that ranked 9th. And this happened despite the fact that they ran the ball the 7th most times when within the 10-yard line last year. I like both Carson and Rashad Penny at their ADPs this year because they'll each have some sort of standalone value. But if the other one gets injured, then the upside is there as well. And then with Tevin Coleman, I'm buying the system. It sounds like Coleman will be the 1A in the committee in San Francisco, and it's a system that provided the 5th most yards from scrimmage at running back last year despite a very, very poor situation. So if I'm looking at backs in that range, I guess that I would go with Chris Carson and Tevin Coleman. This next question is from @AndyWaz. For auction drafts, do Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott's values drop, or would you still take on the risk? Well, I think it's important to remember that there's not some significant difference in an auction draft versus a snake draft. Like, just because you're bidding on players versus selecting them straight up when it's your turn to pick, doesn't mean that the player will produce any differently. What you have to do in an auction draft is be reactive. It only takes one other manager to drive a price up on a player. But there's also a chance to get nice cost savings on guys because no one else in the league is high on that particular player. So yes, their values drop in an auction format as long as they're holding out, just as they would in a snake draft. This next question is from @usetheforsh. I know your pre-draft rookie rankings model didn't like Josh Jacobs. Has your opinion of him changed since the start of training camp? Yeah, one of the things I talked about a lot this offseason is how much I value draft capital at the running back position. It matters a lot. So if a player that my model wasn't in love with goes in the first round of the draft, it would be absolutely foolish for me to not adjust. From a college production standpoint, Jacobs has plenty of red flags. I don't care who was in his backfield, we're just looking at trends, and there were flags. No first round running back over the last 15 years had a lower attempts per game rate than Josh Jacobs, during his final collegiate season, that is. None had a lower rushing yards per game or rushing yard share. Those are red flags. But I ranked Jacobs as the number 2 player in rookie drafts this season for a reason. Almost every first round running back has given us a very usable season over the last decade and a half. And a lot of the first round running backs are wildly important in fantasy football. The talent disparity at running back is far less important than it is at a position like wide receiver. The most talented running backs should hypothetically be the starters on their teams. But coaches are driving the volume for these players more than they are at wide receiver. Wide receivers need to get open in order to be targeted. Running backs just need to be on the field in order to get a handoff on a running play. Now, I'm not discrediting anything that a running back does. I'm just talking about what matters from a fantasy perspective, and what matters is volume. You're buying volume. And at running back, that volume is derived from coaching decisions more than other positions. That's why draft capital matters a little bit more at that position. So the prospect model, to me, is there for guidance. It always will need context. And when I inputted Josh Jacobs' draft capital into that model, he didn't pass David Montgomery, Miles Sanders, or Daryl Henderson, but he was next on that list to succeed. And that's with very crappy college production. So this is just a long-winded way of saying, I adjusted all of this even before the draft when we knew that Jacobs would likely be a first-round pick. This last question is from @MasonSouza1. Your strategy on drafting quarterbacks is well documented. I mean, it's in your Twitter username. But hypothetically speaking, if Mahomes were to mirror his ridiculous season last year again, would that sway you to take him at his ADP? Or any player for that matter, like a Tyler Lockett? If I was guaranteed Patrick Mahomes' 2018 season here in 2019, I would absolutely take him in the third round. I would take him at his ADP. The stance and strategy I have around quarterbacks isn't that a quarterback can't be a weekly difference maker. Patrick Mahomes was a weekly difference maker last year. It's that the position is replaceable. It's deep. You can wait forever and still get a viable option. And that hurts your opportunity cost when selecting one early in your drafts. And the position is also predictable week to week, which helps with streaming. So hell yeah, I'd take Patrick Mahomes at his ADP if I were guaranteed his 2018 season. I don't really think Tyler Lockett should be included here, though. I genuinely think that there's a misrepresentation out there of Tyler Lockett's 2018 season. Even though he scored so many touchdowns, he was still better from a real football perspective than a fantasy one. His lack of volume still made him just a low-end wide receiver too, despite all those touchdowns. I actually almost like Tyler Lockett's outlook more this season than what he did last year. But yeah, to your main point, if I were guaranteed Patrick Mahomes' 2018 season in 2019, I'll take him in the third round without a problem. But you almost need a season like that in order for him to give you a positive ROI. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And wherever you listen to the show, please do me a favor and leave a rating and review. You can also follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. Hope you have a great weekend.